ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Don't sweat the technique.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here comes the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio. Here's Joe Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Oh, hell yeah. You about to get all stung up.
What up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing?
He's Blank, I'm Branham. It's Sean Mapes behind the glass. Just an ordinary producer, not the assistant to the regional manager. But he's doing two jobs today. He's doing the... He's doing the jobs of two men. He's doing his normal job, being on with Paul, the most interactive show on the radio.
Next hour.
And now he's producing us, where this show is going to be more interactive than his somehow, right. Some way. Yeah. Trying to get a gauge of Sean.
Sean, if he gets
insulted when we talk about his show like AC does sometimes.
Nah. When you finish today, Sean, you'll have put in more hours today than Joe will have put in all week.
Oh, yeah, and not to mention tomorrow, too.
Joe's
yeah.
working today. I know that he is. I've literally seen it. He's accepted, and he's also declined some of my vacation days.
Oh.
So he is working today.
Okay.
He is working. He is doing business. Hopefully he doesn't get credit for working at home.
If that's a vacation day and he's actually working, then he's stupid.
Well, I'm hoping that he's not. He's counting it as a vacation day.
Why? You want to get rid of him?
No, but if he doesn't count today as a vacation day because he's doing assistant to the regional manager stuff, that means he's going to take off a future day.
Oh,
he's going to have one more PTO day. We think today's a PTO day.
Like Sean.
Yeah, I do too. Not that we don't like Sean, although Sean might not like us by the end of the show. Plus, he's working longer than he normally does. The Texans have a quarterback, maybe. C.J. Stroud was running with the ones today. Now, D'Amico Ryans has said in the last few minutes that they're going to rotate who the number one quarterback is. So, for a brief moment, Houston, we have a quarterback again. But Davis Mills is also going to get some reps with the one as mandatory camp is opening up for the Houston Texans and around the league.
Yeah. I liked how people now that it's, you know, the difference between like tweets last year with Davis Mills, where they're like, Mills made a lot of horrible throws, just looked terrible. And now you see the different media members tweeting out going, there was some good and some okay moments for
too.
C.J. Stroud. I'm like, all right, okay, you don't have to soft sell it just because the kid was a first round pick.
I feel like there's a little bit more, how do I want to phrase this? Maybe excuses for a rookie quarterback with C.J. Stroud, though, because I think that he's probably more liked. There's probably more hope for C.J. Stroud than there was for Davis Mills, and rightfully so. I mean, C.J. Stroud was the number two pick of the NFL draft. Davis Mills is a third rounder, so there should be more hope for C.J. Stroud. But training camp happening today. The biggest story coming out of training camp, though, is that Cody Stoops is out there and will have his 11 Texans observations posted to the ESPN 97.5 site and the Sports Map site probably later today, which I cannot wait to dive into that tomorrow. Cannot wait to dive into that tomorrow.
Do you have a paramedic near him?
Near me?
No, near him out at camp. Is that outside?
It is outside. They were working outside. The videos I saw today, they were working outside, which I saw a lot of football videos of football players making a lot of good football plays today. I saw a lot of that.
How's the defense look on the offensive players?
They don't show those videos for some reason. They only show like outstanding catches. They show outstanding throws. They show C.J. Stroud, the Dalton Schultz. You know, football videos of football players making good football plays.
I think for us, when we've talked about this in the past, we don't care a whole lot as long as no one gets hurt. Guys start learning the system. And everything else stays status quo as D'Amico gets comfortable and the coaching staff settles in and the players get used to the playbook. Other than that,
I think it does matter. I think that it is important. I think a lot of it's silly. I think
I'm talking about from a media perspective, like trying to overhype what happened this week.
You have to dive through the weeds. Most of it is that. Most of it's minutia. 90 to 95% of it is just silliness. Like I remember a certain media member talking up how great Nico Collins was yesterday because he made a leaping catch in the end zone. Dude, these are professional football players. They're all going to make leaping catches. They're all going to have, like, acts of achievement. They're all going to have feats of strength. They're professional football players. They're going to have a moment where they look good.
Well, Jeremy, also, how many times since Nico Collins has become a Texan have we had people overhype a high-pointing football catch at a practice, going, oh, he's ready to turn it on.
Exactly.
This is going to be a breakout for him. He went up over two defenders, and woo, he's got some hands.
I love Tangdell. I love Tank Dell. I love Case Keenum. Go Cougs. Go Cougs. Little double entendre. Go Cougs. They showed a video the other day of Case Keenum throwing a football to Tank Dell, and everybody lost their minds. Look how great Tank Dell is. He can cut on a dime. Like, look, I love Tank. I love Case Keenum. That video is telling you nothing. Does it get you excitement? Does it create buzz around the fan base? Yes. Does it mean Tank Dell is going to win the Rookie of the Year? No. Like, they're football players making football plays on a football field. The stuff that I do like, though, is, okay, I want to hear how C.J. Stroud looks running 7-on-7. I want to hear some of the throws that he makes that he's looking good, some that he's making bad. I like information. Now, am I going to overreact to said information? I will not. I think it's silly. And, like, the football videos, too, that I see posted, I understand why these content teams are doing it. They get likes, they get impressions, they get eyeballs on their brand. You have to do it. The thing that annoys me, I guess, is like the viewer that watches it that overreacts to a video. And I'll just go back to the Tank Dell one. He catches a 5-yard slant, Tank Dell Rookie of the Year. That maybe I'm being get off my lawn guy, but that annoys me. I'll be completely honest.
Because of the fact that people overhype a lot of stuff, I don't want to downplay the fact that there are a lot of storylines that you want updates on, that you want to hear positive things.
And the importance of it.
Yeah.
Like, it's important to hear Stroud individually.
Good reports on Stroud. You want to hear that Stingley is 100% healthy, first and foremost, and that he looks like, you know, D'Amico's scheme is going to be more right for him. They're going to be playing more man. He's going to be doing things in his one-on-one coverages with receivers. He's looked good. I want to hear those kind of things. I want to hear D'Amico, who has no choice but to and would do it anyway, but tell me that Will Anderson looks exactly like the player that they drafted and why they went and got him. Those are all great things, and those are the things I do want to hear. Mm-hmm. But I don't want people hyper-over-analyzing, you know, camp battles and guys that, you know, might be on the bubble and or ready for a breakout year, because at this point, you just don't know.
You have to filter through a lot of minutia. You really do. 90% of it is not pertinent information. But I do think it's important, especially for the players. Like, it's great for C.J. Stroud, right? Texans mandatory camp. It's important for the rookies. It's important for everybody. Getting to know each other. Blah, 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 blah. I think it is like one brick in a big brick wall. Sometimes the overreactions we get to mandatory camp news and June 13th is ridiculous. Like, we're going to hear how CJ Stroud looked on a 5-yard slant today. How did CJ Stroud look on the deep ball? Last week, Will Levis, he was doing some weird shuffle drill, right? And he did a 180 and then threw a ball in the net. Well, he missed the net. Oh, he's a bust. He's terrible. He's awful. He's not going to be good. Like, let's pump the brakes on overreactions.
All of that stuff.
In mandatory camp in June 13th. Does it have a place? Absolutely. Is it important to the players? Absolutely. Is there information that comes out of it that is good to digest and good to talk about? Yes, 100%. Absolutely. But don't lose your mind on a 5-second video content from the social media team.
I mean, let's be honest. Even now, there's still roster moves that are being considered. There are still guys that, you know, that are going to be camp ads that actually may factor into, you know, what teams are doing. But for now, it's like setting the outline for what they want to do this season and trying to structure your playbook. There's not a whole lot of in-depth to get into at this point.
Yeah. 713-780-ESPN. How do you digest training camp? The Angels and Shohei Ohtani, they did the Astros a favor yesterday.
Yeah, they did.
They did the Astros a bit of a favor yesterday. Shohei Ohtani had a double dong night for the Angels, went into extras and they won, which was great because now the Astros are 4.5 games back from the AL West lead behind the Texas Rangers, Tab's favorite team. At what point, though, like, look, we're paying attention to this race. I mean, the Astros are 66 games into the season. The Rangers are 65 games into the year. Rangers have our attention. Second best record in the American League, a really good offense, tied with the second best record of the Baltimore Orioles. Like, a legitimate rotation, although John Gray is going to miss his start today with a little bit of a blister issue. At what point does the lead, and right now it's 4.5 games we're talking today, at what point would 4.5 games feel daunting? You can look at it from a calendar perspective. You can look at it from a this amount of games perspective. At what point does a 4.5 game deficit in the American League West feel daunting? 713-780-3776. What would you say, Blankers?
I'm thinking about it. 4.5, I'd have to say September. Not till September is 4.5 insurmountable to me or something I'm concerned about.
Yeah.
Because I think with this team and with this division and the way that the Astros are capable of turning it on, and because we know that there have been injuries to overcome as well, until you get to September, 4.5 is not enough. I said yesterday, when you start getting into 10 and 10 plus, no matter where you are in the year, now you're worried about a division that might be getting out of hand, that might be out of reach. You might still make the playoffs, but the division might be out of reach. I don't want to get to that point. And so 4.5 to me right now is nothing to squirm about.
Yeah, see, I want to win the division. I want the Astros to win the division. I want them to finish with a top two seed. Like, to win a World Series, if you're a top two seed, you have to win three series. You win a division series, best of five, a league championship series, best of seven, World Series, best of seven. I don't want an additional series. Like, now you're talking about a fourth series. It's a best of three. I don't want to mess with that. I'd rather win three series and win it all. I don't want to mess with four series having to win it all and a three-game series on top of that where, you know, the ball bounces the wrong way a couple of games. Your season is literally over. So I do want to push the gas to try to finish with a top two spot in the American League. My answer is about the same. I was going to say either 30 games left or September 1st. Now, this is a year where there's like 27 games left in September. There's 27 games for the Astros in September. Three of them are in Arlington against the Rangers. So that's kind of semantics. I'm right there with you. Somewhere, I think that if you look at it from a calendar perspective, 4.5 is not what I would consider daunting until the calendar turns to September or you're within 30 games. I think that's where the Astros are. And the Astros still have tons of games. The Astros still have 95-plus games left on their schedule.
Yeah, look, again, if we were talking about a team that was looking for its first opportunity to ever to make the playoffs or a team that, you know, is desperate to win their first division title, then maybe we'd be watching this with a little different frame of mind. But this is the Astros. This is the run. This is their division. This is what they've done. And yeah, the Rangers have found something this year. And look, I'm not trying to take anything. I know it's Dallas and all those things that drive people nuts. Rangers are a damn good baseball team, and they're not going away. And no matter who they lost and what situation they're in, they're way better than they were even a year ago. So you do have to give them their respect, and you do have to acknowledge they're a good baseball team. You're better. And all you got to do is handle your business, and if you're healthy, I feel good about it. So that's why I'm not going to lose any sleep right now about where the Rangers are as opposed to where the Astros are.
Yeah. Give me 30 days, last month of the calendar, somewhere around there. I think that's where 4.5 is daunting. What is that answer for you? 713-780-ESPN, the HR&P listener line, 713-780-3776. We're on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975. He's at Pac-Man Joel on Twitter. I'm at Jeremy Branham. Ryan Pressly was on with the bench yesterday. The Martin Maldonado, Yiner Diaz conversation has been a contentious one amongst Astros fans. Ryan Pressly gave his thoughts on the Maldonado Yiner conversation as best he could. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
All teams covered. No stalking points necessary. You're back with the Killer Bees on 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
Poor Marine Sean's asking why I'm not a moderator yet on our Twitch. Do you have any information to that? Joe won't allow me to be the mod. I don't know why. I think I'm a man of the people.
I have no idea how the Twitch moderation stuff works.
I don't really want one.
But neither poor Marine would want to take on that kind of...
Poor Marine wants me to do it, and I like to stick... I consider myself a maverick for the people. So, for them, I would do it. I would do the civic duty for them. Personally, I want nothing to do with it. But for them, I would do it. I'd be willing to do it for them. Because I love the Twitchers. I love all of our listeners.
Junior says Stutes is now a moderator and banning people?
Couldn't tell you. Don't watch that show on Twitch.
You don't listen to it either. I understand that.
I listened to the first 4.5 minutes to see if we're right about what they talk about.
Car, yeah.
Although I never really guessed right. Jet, I didn't know that. I didn't know that he was a mod.
I don't know if that's true. We know that the other one is like the king of... I know there's someone with the name King of Twitch, but there's another one that's the self-appointed King of Twitch.
Maybe the czar.
Yeah.
Of Twitch, maybe? Yeah. For you're talking about Jake.
Yeah. Oh, okay. El Presidente.
Yeah. I know you don't like to mention that name.
No, sure don't.
Jet also reminded us that it is Taco Tuesday, which is a huge theme of our Tuesday
Thanks,
shows.
LeBron.
Of the LeBron created Taco Tuesdays. Yeah. It was his invention. Oh, the Yiner Diaz Martin Maldonado conversation. 713-780-ESPN. 713-780-3776. 9227, by the way. 4.5 back with 10 to go is too much to overcome. That's cutting a little close there. 4.5 with 10 to play, I think, is cutting it a little close. I think it's way too close. Because
now
you're looking at, you know, the Rangers would have to go like, let's say 3-7, and you would have to go like 8-3.
Yeah.
Like, that's a little much.
Yeah, you go from, you say it, you go from, yeah, you got to, nothing that's, that there's that insurmountable too. So you say there's a chance. Like, if everything falls absolutely right, there's a sliver of hope that you can still pull it out. Yeah, 4.5 with 10 to go is definitely time to panic.
All right, Yonder Diaz, Martin Maldonado. This might be... Is this the most contentious conversation when it comes to the Astros?
Next to Abreu.
I see. I don't think that that's contentious because there's not really another option. Like, what if you're not getting Abreu, what are you doing? Like, I feel like the
biggest... Yiner there.
Yeah, I don't think that's as contentious. Like, I've tried to make that contentious.
I know.
I've tried to say, look, Yiner versus Abreu, maybe we need to take a look at that. Also, Yiner Maldonado. But Yiner Maldonado is way more contentious than Yiner Abreu.
You asked the question, and I said, yeah, the next closest thing would be Abreu in the lineup and him playing.
This is the most contentious conversation when it comes to the 2023 Houston Astros, the Martin Maldonado, the invisible, you know, intangibles, which I do believe exist. I totally believe that they exist. I agree with Dusty. I agree with the old school, how you receive, how you see a pitcher through a game, how you call a game. I do value that. I know a lot of like the geeky, nerdy analytical guys, which I've been confused for. I think I can stack up numbers wise with anybody, but I also have an old school element to that as well. Then you have the Yiner Diaz, which I don't think anybody would argue that Yiner Diaz is a better offensive player than Martin Maldonado. The conversation really is, does Yiner's offense outweigh Maldonado's intangibles to where he should be playing more behind the dish? Should Maldi still play a lot because he's the captain? He helps all these pitchers. Well, Ryan Pressly, who was on with the bench yesterday because of his relationship with Veritex Bank. He's doing a great thing, by the way. He's trying to raise awareness for financial literacy, which I think is great. That's great. So good. Like, kids need to know about finances. I wish I knew a lot more about finances coming out of high school. Yeah, it's great. I love the cause. I think it's fantastic. And it's kind of like, not that we like are anti-reading for kids, right? But a lot of people do that. Like, you don't hear a whole lot of campaigns for financial literacy. So I think this is great.
Well, real quick, but the one thing that you always see is, well, the rookie symposium is giving these guys financial advice. Kids should have already had financial advice well before that so that they could set themselves up for whether you get a job in professional sports or not, so you can handle your own business and you don't put yourself in trouble or kill your credit.
Yeah, so I think that this cause is great. That's why he was in yesterday talking to the guys. But, you know, he talked about Martin Maldonado and the value of Martin Maldonado. Talked a little bit about, he didn't really talk a ton about Yiner Diaz, but he was asked the question about, like, you like throwing to both of these guys? Like, yeah, I like throwing to both of them. But here was Pressly on the value of what Martin Maldonado brings to a team.
So great about Maldonado.
Yeah, what is it? Oh, man, where do I start?
Yeah.
You know, for instance, we'll be on the plane and, like I said, I think I've said this in a couple interviews before, but he's been that guy that literally the entire plane is dark, but you see one light on, and he's got a computer right here to his right. So we got a whole three seats right in the row, and you know the tray tables. He's got every single tray table down. He's got a computer on one side. He's got another laptop on this side. And he's got his notes right in front of you, and he's looking at your OPS. He's looking at what you do in this situation, and that situation is, are you more aggressive with guys on second? And not just that, but he can read your swing when he's behind the plate. So we can have this entire scouting report, but then you get on the mound and he can change it like that in a snap of the fingers. And it's just
give us an example of when that's happened. Can you think of one?
Well, for instance, we were last game. We found, I'm not going to say it on air, but we found something with a certain player that we faced, and after we just
it was going on during the game
okay. And Maldi saw it. He saw some feet being moved in the box and some hitters kind of being a little bit more aggressive. So we were like, you know what, we're going to switch it up a little bit. We're going to do this now. And there's just certain things that he can see that we can't.
There you go. So that was Ryan Pressly, pitcher for the Astros, closer for the Houston Astros, talking about the value of Martin Maldonado. So I think the first question you have to ask yourself, is that valuable? Is that valuable to a baseball team?
I think there's no question it's valuable. If you think analytics is valuable with offenses and hitting and all those things, and you know that, you know, analytics is changing sports in a lot of ways, that's the best kind of intel analytics you can have for a pitching staff, is a guy that goes that far in depth to try and do his job as good as he possibly can.
Yeah, I'm completely agree that it is valuable. I think that the real conversation now becomes, is the value of what Martin Maldonado doing, is it so much more valuable to where he should be the primary catcher over Yiner Diaz, who is clearly the better offensive player? So, like, you have to kind of look at it from a sliding scale. You also can look at it, like, all those things that I heard Ryan Pressly talk about, I think most of them can be done from the dugout as the understudy for Yiner Diaz. I know we've disagreed about calling pitches from the dugout. All the other stuff, scouting for a team, game plan of how to attack a hitter, being able to – it's a little bit of a different perspective when you're behind the plate versus in the dugout in terms of, like, what is the hitter doing? What is he – like, how is he taking pitches? How is he seeing pitches? It's a little different, but I don't think it's, like, night and day. If he loses a little bit of efficiency, I think it's, like, 5%. I think it's very, very small. So all of those things that Ryan Pressly talked about, we agree are incredibly important. Most of them I think you can do from the dugout, game planning, attacking hitters, knowing which pitches are go-to pitches with your pitcher. Analyzing from the fly, I would say for the most part. I think it is a better view behind the dish.
With iPads?
Yeah.
You get the camera views and you're seeing it from the dugout as well. You can see what his feet are doing.
I think I'll split hairs a little bit. I'll concede that it's not a big difference. It's a very, very minor difference. But I think being behind the dish with the hitter right there is a little bit different. Not a lot. A little bit different than the monitors and watching it from the dugout. Slightly. Not a ton. Slightly. But is it enough to where, look, Maldonado's great at that. I would say Maldi's better than Yiner at that. But is it great enough that Maldi should be playing more often than Yiner Diaz?
You know what? I think that the one thing that I question on that before answering that question is it seems like even in Maldi's mind, because he does so much and he's so focused on the defensive end, it's almost like he throws away at bats. And I think that could be concerning. And I think that it's hard for you to say that if this is totally your job, I love that he's doing all this extra work and this extra effort to do the defensive part of his job and be the best receiver he can be. But I also question then, is he doing the same kind of things offensively in the cages, working on his swing, looking at video, and trying to be the best hitter he can be too? Because my honest answer is, I don't think so. He's spending so much time, there's only so much time in a day, to do all the things he's doing defensively that I've seen too much. And just from an outsider's observation, I don't think he's doing nearly enough to be a good hitter.
Well, he's not going to take hacks on the plane. Like,
no, but I'm saying, look at your video. Watch, you know, like Bregman does. Watch your swings. Watch your tendencies. You know, are you dropping your shoulder? Different things with your stance in the box. Those things could be analyzed on the plane as well.
I would be surprised if he's not, but we don't know that.
Right, like, we don't know.
I do agree with you that he spends more time probably like his ability to receive game plan, I think probably does take priority over his offense. Here was Ryan Pressly. This is one that wasn't really talked about. It wasn't on social. It wasn't posted about. But one that I also think is pretty critical whenever you listen to an Astros pitcher talk about the value of what a Martin Maldonado brings to the table.
I mean, pitching wins championships.
Right.
You know, it's hard to win when you don't score. So, I mean, you go out there and you put up quality starts and you have a lockdown bullpen, you're going to have success in this league. And Maldi's a big, big part of that. And a lot of people, you know, get on him for the hitting and all that stuff. But he's that guy that's like, I just want to help in any way possible. And he does. And it's unbelievable to have him back there because you have the confidence because you know he's put in the work to make that call of, okay, we want to go fastball away. Hey, we want to go change up here. When a guy is known for hitting changes, he's like, but he has the confidence in calling that because he has done the reports.
So there you go. There's Ryan Pressly with more information on Martin Maldonado. This is why it's a tough decision for Dusty. Because, like, what Ryan Pressly's in that dugout. Ryan Pressly's one of 26. Ryan Pressly's throwing to Martin Maldonado, talking about the value. And you can throw the defensive numbers there. You like the pop time. Great. You know, the Maldonado's not great at blocking pitches. He led the American League last year in pass balls. He leads the American League this year in pass balls. But it's about the game plan. It's about which pitches to call. It's all of that. And that is what Dusty Baker also values in Martin Maldonado. And Dusty's telling you that that is more valuable for his catcher and his ninth-hole hitter than what Yiner Diaz brings to the table offensively.
And you know what? As a manager, to have that extra security blanket of knowing how in-depth, when you hear Pressly talking, we already know that, you know, we always say good pitching can beat good hitting anyway. But when you think about it from a managerial perspective, to have a guy that goes that in depth, that takes that deep of a dive, and then lays it all out to give his pitchers all the best chance to succeed. And we don't know how many catchers in baseball are doing it to that level. Mm-hmm. But you know that the effectiveness has been there for this team. And this is more than we joke about mound visits. This is when you're talking about it actually being tangible to where you say, this dude is making a difference with every pitcher, every single game, on almost every pitch. I think that has a massive value to a manager especially when you know that, you know, pitching and defense is as important as anything. I think that's what that's why Dusty trusts him so much and wants to continue doing what he's been doing.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they basically said their offensive lineup is supposed to be good enough that you don't have to worry about Maldi with a bat as long as you know you don't have to worry about him behind the plate.
I don't know where it makes me land, though. Like, if I had to land to a specific, okay, this guy's my catcher 60% of the time, this guy's my catcher 40% of the time, because I still value this. Ryan Pressly's telling you it's valuable. Dusty's telling you it's valuable. We all agree that it's valuable. I think people that can get away from their computers and go watch a game would tell you that, you know, it's valuable. Like, I trust Ryan Pressly over a geek that's looking at the computer, right? But I don't quite agree with Dusty that Maldi should start four of every five games. Like, give Maldi three guys and give Yiner two. If find your three most affected pitchers that will be aided by Martin Maldonado. I think we would all agree that Framber Valdez is one of those guys. I think Hunter Brown is probably one of those guys, and I know that Hunter Brown's catcher ERA is better with Yiner. I think Brown prefers to pitch to Maldonado, and throw in whatever other pitcher. Give Maldi three, give Yiner two.
Like, I think Maldi,
I want that to be the gap. I want that to be the ratio.
Yeah, I think Maldi gets Framber, Javier, the top three.
Javier's weird, though, because, like, he's a two-pitch guy. Like, you don't really have to have as much strategy and game plan with a Framber who throws a bunch of different pitches, is a basket case upstairs sometimes, whereas Javier's cool, calm, collected, throws two pitches. So I think, like, I see where you're going there because you want to give the best pitchers the catcher that can help those pitchers, but I think Javier's actually a guy that should go to Yiner.
Well, and on the flip side, too, because one of the things I was going to bring up is, at what point, because Maldi doesn't look like a guy that next year is going to be looking for his next destination.
The organization, I don't think he'll be with the Astros.
I don't know that. It depends on if he wants to keep playing.
Yeah,
but if he wants to coach, yeah, if he wants to coach and stay in the organization, I think they would love that.
Sure.
So then at a certain point, you also wonder, how much can he be teaching? We talk about quarterbacks that don't want to help their predecessor, you know, their successor. But how much could he be teaching Yiner along the way, too, to kind of know how to do what he does?
Pressly said he's teaching him a lot, which is great.
Because awesome. At the same time, you want him also working sometimes with the young pitchers to say, hey, even if I'm not here, these are the kind of things the pitchers have to be aware of, that he's been there, done that, and he can teach them some things so that they have a different mental attitude when they're on the mound and how they think through at bats.
You hope Yiner's being a sponge
right. To
all of that. Right. You do, because Maldonado does have value when it comes to that. Give him three pitchers, give Yiner two, and whoever it is. I think the one that we would all agree on is that Maldi gets Framber, because he's
no
his psychologist. 713-780-ESPN. Where do you land on the split between Maldonado and Yiner Diaz? 713-780-3776, the HRMP listener line. I have Blanker's, one of Blanker's favorite games. Would you rather, a couple actually, an Astros first base style would you rather, and a hated Astro would you rather? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Welcome back, Houston. It's the Killer Bees, Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham, live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
7593. If the only thing that Maldi's better than Yiner at is game planning and adjusting that plan during the game, why can't he do that from the dugout? Intangibles can be reflected upon the game from afar. Yiner's tangibles have earned him more playing time. This is why this conversation is contentious and a bit polarizing, is because, like, you can make sense of both sides. I completely understand both sides. I am a believer in Maldi's intangibles, the hidden stuff, but I also want Yiner to catch more games behind the plate. I would agree for the most part that all of that stuff that Pressly was talking about, the game planning, the attacking hitters, which pitches to throw to which guys, for the most part, that stuff can be done from the dugout. It's a little bit more difficult in terms of calling the game, calling the pitches, and then, like, which count that you're calling those pitches in. Like, those are things you can't do from the dugout that Maldi can do from behind the plate.
Well, and I think that in the midst of a game, if you're behind the plate too, conversations with the umpire happen. I mean, to your point, you not only see things differently in terms of a hitter's swing or where the pitchers are actually coming into before having to wait to see them on an iPad, but you see things like the adjustment in footwork. You know what kind of strike zone the umpire is calling. And you know, in certain situations, you can't do how many, you only get so many mound visits too, to where you're going to have to deal with some things on the fly that you can do when you just call timeout behind the dish, as opposed to sitting in the dugout and trying to tell your pitching coach or tell somebody to go out there and say this or do that.
Yeah. And the pitch clock too. King of Twitch brings that That's up too. True. The pitch That's clock aspect of it is it you do need to be more timely now than ever. Mm-hmm. You used to not have to worry about the pitch clock. Now you do have to worry about the pitch clock. 713-780-ESPN. Yiner, the Maldi, Diaz, the whole conversation contentious. Curious where you land on it. 713-780-3776. So I have a pair of who would you rathers here. We know that the Astros are looking for, or at least we've been, yeah, I mean, Dana Brown flat out said it. He said they want a hitter, they want a left-handed bat. They can play multiple positions. I think that they would like a guy. What's interesting that he says that, we want a left-handed bat that can play multiple positions, and they have Michael Brantley chilling on the aisle. Like, you would think that that would be his guy, but maybe he just doesn't have belief that he can be that guy because he's hurt and he has a bad shoulder and he's old. So here are a couple of hood you rathers, because I saw that the Cody Bellinger name popped up yesterday. Like, whenever I saw MLB Trade Rumors post about it, I said, like, Cody Bellinger. I saw Michael Schwab, who's the king of Astros Twitter, bring up Cody Bellinger, and he hates the idea of Cody Bellinger, which I think more than half of the Astros fan base hates the idea of Cody Bellinger. So here's a tough who would you rather. I'll start with this one. Would you rather have on the Astros Roberto Osuna or Cody Bellinger? 713-780-3776, by the way.
I mean, look.
Sure. You can define the timeline. I don't know if it changes my answer.
Okay. I think this year, Cody Bellinger is the easy answer because of he has the skill set to fill the void that you are looking for. I don't think that you're looking for Roberto Osuna to complement or replace Ryan Pressly at the back end of the bullpen. And I think your bullpen is the best bullpen in baseball. It has been that way for over a year. If it's not the best, it's in the top three. So you don't need to worry about Roberto Osuna and all the baggage he brings with. Cody Bellinger, it's a different kind of baggage because it's a war of words. It's animosity in a rivalry between teams. But as it relates to this year's team and what he could possibly do to help this team, I'll take Bellinger over Osuna.
Yeah, see, I'm probably Bellinger, period. Like, 2023 and every year after. Like, there's no way I'm picking Osuna over Cody Bellinger. It's why, like, the conversation kind of intrigues me, because I saw a lot of disdain for Cody Bellinger yesterday. I get why. Like, he was bashing Altuve. He was bashing the Astros. He was really mad in 2019 about the Astros winning the title in 17. Said Altuve stole the MVP, and he wasn't educated. And Carlos Correa told him, if he didn't know what he was talking about, to shut the you-know-what up, which was the best thing that Carlos Correa has done outside of mound visits. We all know that. But Cody Bellinger just talked. Like, Roberto Osuna was alleged of doing some pretty nasty, heinous things and is no longer in baseball. Like, the Astros were the only and he pitched well. Like, Roberto Osuna pitched well for the Houston Astros. If Roberto Osuna didn't have baggage, Roberto Osuna would be in baseball.
It's true.
Roberto Osuna's playing in Mexico. Like, he is so damaged in terms of reputation, off-the-field stuff, he can't land a Major League Baseball job. But I'm seeing reaction that you rather have Osuna, people, not you specifically, just, like, listener, they rather have Roberto Osuna than Cody Bellinger. That makes zero sense to me.
Yeah, it's morals and values versus baseball, right? I mean, you know, the baseball talk is going to come and go, and we see it all the time. We see, you know, Red Sox join the Dodgers. We've seen, you know, Mookie Betts and the video guy that actually was in the middle of it, you know, are with the Dodgers, and now Dodger fans seem to turn a blind eye and forget about all that, don't have a single care in the world. Some of them are going to extend, like Joe Kelly, and that's never going to go away, and I don't think there's any time Joe Kelly's going to be an Astro or that the Astros would consider it, or he would. But I think when you talk about a Bellinger situation, if he knows he gets a chance to play on a big stage in the playoffs, he's looking for another deal, he's on a one-year deal, he's trying to reinvent himself because he has fallen off the planet over the last several years, and he somewhat resurrected it before he got hurt in Chicago this year. You look at him and you say, hey, this could be the right thing for both parties, as long as it doesn't break up the harmony in the locker room. So I do think that there has to be a discussion or two within your key veteran players in that locker room to make sure there's nothing that's still lingering. But it's a way different conversation to say, hey, Bellinger was pissed at the Astros. The Astros then got pissed at him. Can you get over it? As opposed to, this is what this dude did off the field, which has far greater ramifications than anything that he could have done on, you know, with his mouth on the baseball field.
Yeah, like I get that no one likes him, and I get that he ran his mouth about the Astros. I'd rather still have him over Osuna. And I'm asking Altuve. I'm asking Jose Altuve before I make that trade. Like, Jeff Luhnow, if you go back and read Winning Fixes Everything, Jeff Luhnow would ask people about Roberto Osuna. They would be like, you can't trade for Roberto Osuna. And Jeff Luhnow would either fire them or he wouldn't listen. Like, so I don't think that Dana Brown's going to be that cutthroat and ruthless like Jeff Luhnow was. Dana Brown's going to get he's going to pick the brain of Dusty Baker. He's going to pick the brain of the clubhouse, I firmly believe. Let me ask you this one. Cody Bellinger, if you could pick a guy to have every at-bat at first base for the next 96 games, Jose Abreu or Cody Bellinger?
Wow. See, that's tough for me because if you have to somewhat look at the track record. Bellinger's been just hot garbage the last couple years.
Yeah, it's like they're like the inverse.
Yes.
We're like Bellinger's
exactly
been bad
right.
The last 3 years, good this year. Abreu's been really good the last three
and
years,
bad
this
year.
Now,
he's also shown you some signs over the weekend with the pop coming back a little bit at least, that there's another reason to hold out for another strand of hope and hang on to it. Bellinger's been hurt. He's going to come back. I'm sticking with Abreu. I am, because of the fact that you don't have to worry about rattling the cage of the locker room or all the other things of what's bygone or not bygones. I think I'm going to stick with Abreu if the choice is there, simply because of the fact that I'll take the fact that a guy that's been there, done it, and done it at a high level is starting to look like he's getting it back, as yeah. opposed to a guy that hasn't been doing it for a while that's trying to resurrect his career might be the right fit for you.
I probably go recency bias here and go with Bellinger, because I'm worried that Abreu is just flat-out washed. Like, I'm worried about the bat speed. People come at me and say, well, he's doing well in June. His OPS is slightly above 700 in June, which is terrible for a first baseman. That is bad for a first baseman. Like, this is the best Jose Abreu we've seen, and his OPS is barely passable.
Is that the major league average, did you say?
For 700, first baseman?
Not for a first baseman, just overall baseball.
It's changed since I last knew it. Like, whenever I last knew the average, it was like 770, but that was whenever like they had the good baseballs. Yeah. I could probably pull it up real quick. My guess would be around 730.
I
think
it
would be
low,
major league
yeah,
average.
I thought it was 700 to like 710.
But a first baseman, you know, is going to get more offense than like just your average offensive player. Let me pull it up real quick. American League, the average is 721.
Okay.
League average for OPS in the American League right now is 721. Jose Abreu, at an offensive position and at his best this year, has slightly better than a 700 OPS. That's worrisome.
It ain't great.
Now, if you were to trade for Cody Bellinger, I don't think it's a Cody Bellinger's playing every day at first base and Jose Abreu's not. I think you're probably looking at Bellinger playing several spots on the field.
Center, left.
And he's going to play first base against right-handed pitching, and I bet you Abreu would play first base against left-handed pitching. So you're not aborting Jose Abreu. You're just seriously and substantially limiting his at-bats by adding somebody like that. And Dana Brown tells you he's wanting to add somebody like that. 713-780-ESPN. Abreu or Bellinger? If you had your druthers, which of the two would you rather have? How can the Rockets build something like the Denver Nuggets, what they built? And are the Nuggets on their way to being a dynasty? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Probably not a dynasty with the Nuggets, but they're building a dynasty in Alvin. A liquor dynasty, a spirits dynasty. It's Gentle Ben. I've been telling you for what seems like years that Gentle Ben is the best. They're building a dynasty. It all starts with the finest ingredients and classic time-honored distilling methods. Gentle Ben uses a revolutionary technology that eliminates impurities for the cleanest, smoothest spirits that you'll ever taste. Who doesn't want that? You get all the flavor with none of the burn. Who doesn't want that? Whether it's the vodka, gin, straight bourbon, whiskey, or the cask-strength bourbon, the next time you head to dinner or go to your favorite bar, ask for Gentle Ben. Look for Gentle Ben at the liquor store, whatever one you go to, whatever's on your way home. Pick up a bottle today. Are you looking for plans? Well, head out to the Gentle Ben tasting room in Alvin like we were last Friday and have a good time. Joe liked it so much on Friday that he went back to the weekend. He went back, had a drink, picked up a bottle because he loved Gentle Ben so much. You will too. Are you headed to the Astros game? They're about to play 9 in a row at home. Well, Gentle Ben has a bar inside of Minute Maid Park, just to the left of the Crawford boxes, right when you walk in the Union Station entrance. Also, Gentle Ben wants to send you to an Astro game. Head over to their website right now, gentleben.com. Learn more about Gentle Ben, but also enter to win their sweepstakes, sending you to an Astro game this summer. Gentle Ben, all of the flavor, none of the burn.
The killer bees. What about the murderous Jays? We've got Joel, Jeremy, and Joe. That's three Jays. Coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios on ESPN 97.5. It's the Killer Bees and Murderous Jays.
No Joe today. Sean Mapes today. Sean, you filling in tomorrow, too? Yeah, Sean. What a trooper.
Boy, Sean is definitely the anti-Joe during the noon to three. He has to talk his ass off with Paul, but he's definitely the anti-Joe on the Bees. He's not saying anything.
He's not.
It's
not
a
saying anything.
Minutes limit situation.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah.
Minutes limit.
Yeah.
Back, can we put one of those on Maldonado? Freddie says Jose Abreu at first, Bellinger left, Jordan DH. Who says no? Okay. That scenario, if you go with that scenario, you're playing Jose Abreu over at least either Chaz McCormick or Jake Meyers. If Brantley's back, which I understand, we don't have a high probability of Brantley being back, but if Brantley's is back, then you're now playing Jose Abreu over Michael Brantley in that scenario. So think about that when you're thinking about this. King of Twitch is an anti-Bellinger guy. He says he doesn't want him anywhere here. Risk, he said, what did Risk say? He said Bellinger would be an asset, but bad blood may exist. That's why I'm asking Altuve. Mm-hmm. That's why I'm asking Jose Altuve, can this team handle Cody Bellinger? If Jose Altuve tells me no, I say, all right, I'm not doing it. If Jose Altuve says we can do it, I'm like, all right, cool, we're in. We're doing it. We're bringing him in. 713-780 ESPN. No, I don't care what Bregman thinks. I don't care about overpaid third baseman.
Well, I just think he's part of that long-standing core.
Bellinger didn't say Bregman's name, though.
He didn't. You're right. But I think that everybody that was in that clubhouse felt a certain kind of way when they heard the comments.
Sure.
So I think that as much as Lance has been a very little part of this team over the last several years,
he's on a beach wishing Mark Berman congratulations in retirement.
You're looking at Bregman, McCullers, Altuve. Is that all that's left as the holdovers?
I thought there was one more.
Well, there was, but Verlander's gone. And
yeah, well, I mean, now.
Yeah.
I think that might be the only three, because Presley was traded for in 18.
Correa's gone, Verlander's gone. Maldi wasn't here for the first one. Brantley wasn't here for the first one.
No.
I think that is it.
I think it's those three.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's those three. So I'm asking Altuve, quite frankly.
Well, maybe, I mean, I would say that at least even if you don't talk to the other two guys, you would think that Altuve is going to get the kind of the feel for the room.
He's the admiral on the team. 60-30, Bellinger, these guys don't care anymore and could help in multiple areas for the Strohs. Plus, it'll make him eat crow being on the team he ran his mouth about. That's the interesting aspect of it, too. Could you imagine, like, the Cubs call Bellinger into the office and say, hey, we just shipped you to Houston. Like, Bellinger's jaw might hit the floor.
Yeah.
Key from L.A., who's seen a lot of Bellinger, fans going to fan and players going to play. At the end of the day, the goal is to win. It's kind of where I stand on this for the most part. 69-55, I would love to bring in Bellinger just so he would have to eat crow. I can boo him every game and then cheer him, I guess, when he hits a homer. And 0145, Cody is not coming here. Weed is not legal. He does look permanently stoned.
Yeah, he does have those Garfield the cat eyes. Yeah, and then when he starts playing the way he's been playing lately, you start wondering if he hasn't been hitting the weed more.
Yeah.
But, yeah, he definitely has the look.
Yeah. What did Dizzle said Joe Kelly is my only hell no. Yeah, Joe Kelly ran his mouth quite a bit, too. But so did
and
Bellinger.
Continued it.
So did
Bellinger. He continued it.
That's true.
Threw it at Bregman. And the Correa thing, and then the whole bench is cleared, and the fat, you know, sticking his lip out and doing all the, you know, the talking while he had six guys between him and anybody that could punch him in the mouth. Yeah, I think Joe Kelly is enemy number one, but I think Cody Bellinger is pretty close behind because they used the media to try and get under the Astros' skin, and for the fan base, at least, it worked.
Yeah. The Nuggets won the NBA championship yesterday. Five games took the Nuggets to win it all, which before the start of the series, I think we both predicted five.
I did.
Yeah. So the Nuggets got that done, dominating the NBA finals for Denver. A couple of conversations to be had coming out of this. You want to go the Jokic angle first? Or you want to go to the team angle first when it comes to the Nuggets? What would it take? Because a lot of people are talking that Denver can turn into like this dynasty.
Which is ludicrous to me.
Well, not the way I phrased it.
Well, no, not the way you phrased it, but it's ludicrous that from a national media perspective, they're already talking and asking the players about them becoming a dynasty. Like, slow down. You just won your first title.
I've been a little bit more lenient to call things dynasties than probably most of us. That is outrageous. They've won one NBA final and they've been to one NBA final.
Right.
Like you can't be a dynasty if you've only been to one NBA final. Like, where do you have domination over?
Right.
Like the Astros, whenever they only had one World Series title, at least they had domination over the American League. Denver does not have domination over the Western Conference. They did this year, the first year. Like, what would it take for Denver to turn this into a dynasty?
Well, I think the hard part, at least the first hard part, is already taken care of, because you already have Murray locked up and the Joker locked up and Aaron Gordon locked up and Porter Jr. locked up. So you've got a core four right there that where teams that want longevity struggle is trying to wrap up guys once they get a title and they're thinking my payday's coming or I'm due to make a boatload more because of what, again, free agency is based on what you've done on your resume, not what you're expected to do going forward. That's how you get the most money. That's how you get paid. And a lot of guys would be willing to cash in and jump ship and go elsewhere. You have your four arguably best players locked up for the foreseeable future. That's what you have to do first and foremost. Now the challenge on your general manager, Calvin Booth, is can I continually put role players around these guys so that even when those role players look to get greener pastures, both money-wise and opportunity-wise, I still find guys that get done the things I need to get done, like Bruce Brown, like Caldwell Pope. And they got Bruce Brown locked up too. And then drafting Brown from Kansas really helped them as well because they got a young player. They're kind of grooming to be one of those guys. So I think the hard part for a lot of this has been done. The next hard part is trying to keep this team from becoming complacent.
Yeah.
Because once you start winning, then you start getting comfortable and feeling really good about yourself and starting to think you're bigger and better than you are, and that's where you can get burned. But I think the toughest part is just managing the roster and the finances, and they're off to a really good start doing that.
Yeah, to be dynastic, I think you need at least two titles, and I think you need to reign supreme in your league and or conference for a period of time. So if the Nuggets were to go, let's say, back-to-back, or if they lost next year in the finals and then win the year after that, then maybe make another finals or two, I would listen to the Nuggets dynasty conversation. I think that's what it's going to take. Jokic being where he's at this stage of his career, Murray's been a bit injury prone. I like that team. I don't know if they have another run in them, though.
Oh, I don't know if I'm going to go that far because, look, this guy should arguably, you can make an argument that he could have been the MVP the last three seasons.
Sure.
So I think that he's probably got a couple more left in him, and they got him. I mean, the crazy thing is this: he was a second-round pick, and they hit on it big time. Right. And then to hit on Murray and to know that after the injury, when everybody thought he might be washed and done and he might not come back strong, mm-hmm. for him to kind of find it at a certain point and now get back to where he was, that to have those two guys that put up those kind of numbers, I don't think it's fair to say that all of a sudden this is it. They're not going to make another run.
Jokic, the thing with me with Jokic is that he's going to be 29 next year, and I know that players age well. I think the prime of athletes' careers, especially in basketball where athleticism is more important than, let's say, baseball, I think your prime of your career is where Jokic is at right now, like your mid to late 20s, probably closer to your late 20s than your mid-20s. And he's like a bigger dude that's not a great athlete. Like, I don't know how he's going to age. And then Murray's thing is, I know he's only had one significant injury, but if Murray can't stay healthy, I don't think that's a team that can win the finals without both of them being on the court at the same time.
I think they're deep, they're long, they're athletic.
Do you think that they could win it with one of those guys being hurt?
No.
Yeah, that's
no,
kind
no
of
way.
My concern.
I mean, injuries is always the wild card that you can't predict. That,
but Murray's had a case of injuries. Like he's been injured in his career. Like he's not an Iron Man. Neither is Jokic, really.
No, but at the same time, I mean, Jokic's type of game, besides bringing the ball up the floor, translates even as he gets a little bit older because he's smart, his footwork's
I think
good.
Offensively it does.
Yeah, offensively is where I'm
going
with
this. I don't
think
defensively, though.
Defensively, he's never going to be a stalwart, right? So I, as long as he can get some rebounds, that's fine because when you surround him with Gordon and Porter Jr., you've got wings that can go up and get the boards he doesn't get, and they're able to kind of make up for some of the things that where he might lose a step. That's why I'm saying to have all four of those guys locked up is kind of unusual to me. And that's a really good step in the right direction. But you got to have shooters.
Maybe I'm disqualifying the other two, though. Like, the other two, I think, are really good role players. If you asked either one of those guys to step up to be a Robin, I don't think they're a title contender.
No, I think they could be a third best player on certain teams.
They're great for that
team. But Robin, no.
Right, that's where I'm at. That's where I'm at with
them. Because they're both on this team, and you have Batman and Robin. That's what I'm saying. They're in an ideal situation, and especially Brown, too, because he's a Swiss Army knife. He does whatever you ask him to do offensively, defensively. They all can make threes. The two bigs can absolutely make up space and rebound and block shots, and they're athletic enough to stay. Look, Gordon was staying with Jimmy Butler, who's a three, so they can defend. So I think that the pieces are there for them to be a very stable force in the West. Now, the question to you, to your comment is, can they win another one or compete for one? That basically is not all in their hands, because now it's what's the rest of the West going to do? If Chris Paul goes and they get another true superstar that's better than the three or four guys Denver has, well, then you've got problems, right? Because Golden State's getting older, but Phoenix keeps getting better. They keep trying to get better by spending as much money as possible. And then you've got to kind of watch Memphis and other teams that might be on the horizon. So the conference and the teams in it can dictate as much as anything else.
Sure.
But I think that from their internal makeup and buildup, I think that they have the right nucleus to where they can make a run now for a couple of years.
I bet you a lunch they don't win another title with this duo.
Just ever?
Yeah.
That's fine.
All right. Sounds good. Another lunch as I try to...
You got to dig your way out.
I'm down two lunches here. 713, I'm trying to dig my way out of it. 713-780-ESPN, HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. Do the Nuggets have another championship in them? And then also, how about the Jokic conversation? People are saying that he cemented himself as a top five center. And we'll also have to talk some Rockets. You have nearly $50 million to spend minimum. Who do you want? Why do you want them? How do the Rockets spend that money? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.